ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके सो देन भक्ति संदर्भ अध्याय 1 आदिकाण्ड 4 भक्ति इज सुपीरियर टू ऑल अदर साधनास। सो देन कंटिन्यू विथ नारद सेज इन स्कंद पुराण। Okay. Persons without bhakti to Vishnu are considered outcasts, and outcasts who engage in bhakti are considered the best. Narada Purana 137, 12. And the dog eater with bhakti is superior to the Brahmin. The Brahmin without bhakti is lower than the dog eater. Narada Purana 133, 41. Because we have to appreciate here that what is being mentioned, so these are the conclusions of the scripture, you know, on bhakti and pointing out its position. These aren't like alternative views. These are that since the material world is created by Krishna for the living entity to uplift himself, then those who do that are doing what they're supposed to do, so then they're the best, and those that don't, they're outcasts. You know, then you know, so it's looking at it from that perspective, because that's what it's for. If you're talking about within the material world, okay, following the slow path where they're going to, take the material world as the serious place or the actual place, and then go around and around in the cycle of samsara, then amongst the outcasts, then the Brahmin is the best. Then the Kshatriya, then the Vaishya, then the Shudra, and then there's the outcasts of the outcast, you know, it just goes down like that. But you have to understand, is outcast means one who's outside of the standard social thing. So one who's outside of bhakti is actually the outcast, right? You can't look at it from this perspective, and that means you contact yourself, then you see, yes, brahminical activities are better, but what's the best brahminical activity? Is Vaishnava. And what's the best Vaishnava? The pure Vaishnava. So that's then what is the standard. It's just where you're going to put it. So yes, anyone who's following the Vedic culture, that's better. But if you're following it and don't know what it's for, you're using it for alternative means, then that's a waste of time. Therefore, the outcast. But if you understand that, no, this is to elevate yourself up to understand Krishna, to bring us back to our position with Krishna, that's proper. Okay. In the verse under discussion, since the person purified his family, he must have purified himself, for it is said, I offer respects to the Lord of inconceivable power. The Kiratas, Hunas, Andarans, Pulindas, Pulkashas, Abhiras, Shumbas, Yavanas, Kashas, and others of low birth and those sinful by actions, by taking shelter of the devotees who take shelter of the powerful Lord, become purified of their prarabdha karma. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18. So the point is by taking shelter of those devotees taking shelter of, then they're naturally going to purify themselves, right? Because they're purified of their prarabdha karmas because of bhakti. Now, you know, the discussion may come up as well. They have to give up, all the sinful activities, so they're not the chandala. But how does it start? It starts by associating with the devotees. They start to get the agyata sukriti. Right, so that's going to mean they're better than others. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making the point that if you're walking down the street and there's a bunch of overly enthusiastic persons on the other side of the street, and when they see the devotees, then they start to mock them by going, "Ah, Hare Krishna! Look at the Hare Krishna!" Then whoever said that, because there's a group and one guy says it, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says he's the best in the group. You know, he's the best in the crowd because he's chanting Hare Krishna because now he has the Gyatra Sukriti. So they're going to have that. So that already puts him better than anybody who's not a devotee like that. And then with time, that Gyatra Sukriti matures. And so then they get faith, right? So when you have faith, they may be still following their lifestyle, but they have faith in the Lord and faith in the devotees. And so that then puts them apart from now they've taken up the process of devotional service. Then they're going to start associating. So in associating, they're going to be at that time of association, always nicely engaged in the Lord's service. They're going to remember those things fondly. So it'll carry on, even if the lifestyle at this point still hasn't really changed. But in that process of sadhu sangha, you're going to see is that they're going to notice what the devotees are doing. And since they're starting to identify with the devotees, they're going to start practicing the things the devotees do. So then they're going to give up their particular diet or things in their diet that's wrong, things in their lifestyle, their cleanliness, their purity. You know, they're going to start doing stuff until they come to the point of bhajana kriya, where that prajna kriya there means the commitment too. So that means then they take initiation in that. So naturally, there's going to be following all the Vaishnava principles. So they're not going to be in any way acting like a chandala on the platform of the sinful activities. But the point is that socially, if there is a social structure in place, then they would be outside that social structure for the mundane persons. For the devotees, they're just another devotee. So the whole point is within the society that we consider the qualified Brahmin with all the, you know, 8, 12 qualities or the 18 qualities or whatever it is that they're dealing with, and that's all they see, then yes, well, amongst them, they'll say these guys are chandalas, these guys are Brahmins. But amongst the Vaishnav society, then they're just devotees. Because the point is they become special from when they start to associate, but specifically when they get faith, when they come to the point of Shraddha, now they're not within the context of everybody else. But it doesn't mean their lifestyle style has changed at all, other than they're thinking of the devotees, doing a little chanting, you know, remembering the things the devotees said, you know, whatever it was that impressed them in devotional service, they're doing that, their lifestyle hasn't changed. They're saying, no, until they do that, then you're saying until they take initiation. But what about all those persons associating and everything? Do they not count as devotees? Does our community, how many of them are initiated, you know, or second initiated? Because if you want to get really serious, it means, you know, I mean, we from the first, but it's when you get second means now you're mature enough. You're stable and all that. Then you'll say yes. Because before that, it's considered it's not actually that devotional. You want to look at it seriously. I mean, if you're looking at, oh, they're not a devotee till here. Well, actually, you're not the devotee till you come to the point of nishta. You have second initiation on the platform, nishta. Then you can say then you're solid because you're steady. That's what the Bhagavatam says. Nishta means you're steady. Every day you're hearing and chanting, worshiping the Lord in some way. It's regular. So that you can say now that's a devotee. While the neophyte, they may be some days doing, some days not. It's irregular. So even though they're a devotee, but it's not, you can't say that's the ideal of the devotee. You know, they're not the, what do you call it? The, what was that? The, yeah, I can't remember the. Yeah, the bee's knees, yeah. So, like that. And then if you take that as, okay, yeah, no, I've come to that platform, so I'm the great devotee, then, you know, it's pointed out, no, until you're a pure devotee, you know, on the platform of Bhava, then you can say you're a devotee. And then, of course, you can say, well, until you come into, you know, apandasa, you become part of the Lord's pastimes because of your full absorption of the Lord in samadhi, as we see that on that night of the Rasa dance, those gopis that got stopped because they weren't on that platform of samadhi. You know, they were absorbed and distracted by the household duties and whatever's going on in the house. But being stopped, then they became to focus on that, and they came to that point of samadhi. Right. So if they came early, you know, immediately, then somehow another Yoga Maya arranged that they could go. The ones that it still would needed a little bit more, they were the ones locked up in the rooms and this and that and couldn't get away, you know. And so then in that condition, then they absorbed themselves so much in Krishna. They came to that point of samadhi, all of their, you know, anything, any residue impiety and piety also. You have to remember the material piety and material impiety, those are all cleared. Then they can, the next rasa dance, they'll be able to go. But the point is that that full absorption, then you can say, is okay, now that's as a serious devotee. But then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, well, until you come to the prema, then only then you can say, now you're actually steady. So we see as Shraddha means you are developing that steadiness all the way through. Shraddha, you know, means Shraddha is maturing. You know, you have one part Shraddha, that's called Shraddha. When there's two parts Shraddha, it's called Sadhusanga. When there's three parts Shraddha, it's called Bhajana Kriya, four parts Anartha and Nivriti, five parts, like this, on up till prema. So prema, with that nine part, that's considered mature Shraddha. But you also see is that the Sadhusanga is increasing. Right? You take more seriously. The farther you go, the more seriously you take sadhusanga. If you see that someone's losing, doesn't think it's important, you can see that there's a weakness there. You know, anartha nivriti, you're always trying to get rid of. So even if you're on the platform, Baba, now it's the anartha is that you're not absorbed in Krishna. You know, so there's always going to be, there's the way the stableness, you're getting more and more stable. So prema is the full stableness. Then that, what do you call it? Then the taste, all these things. So you can see is then prema is the mature form where the appreciation of the Vaishnavas, the remove, there's nothing there at all. There are no anarthas. There, you know, the stableness is perfect. It'll never change because once you get to that, you won't fall down. And then, and so, you know, then the taste is that it's, you know, it's, that's, you know, has reached its perfection. Its attachment has reached you know, the ecstasies and all that have reached. So everything has come to that maturity. So we have to see things in its proper place that, yes, just someone has developed that faith. They're glorious. That's why Krishna is saying is that point is that even if a devotee, you know, because he's a devotee, he's rightly situated. But even if he's committing some abominable action, but he's still rightly situated. He's still devoted. He's still a devotee. Because you see is that those who have that faith may still be doing all kinds of nonsense. Or even in sadhusanga, it's only a bhajana kriya that you have that determination to give it up. But so the gross elements are given up, but it's not necessarily the subtler elements are given up until you get through anartha nivriti. Because what I can say is, oh, you know, this and that, and oh, these, you know, as we were discussing the other day, is, you know, how is it the, you know, the senior person has all this attachment to all these things and this and that, and the fancy clothes and car and places, and he's got, you know, gold leaf on the handles of the taps in his toilet and all that. This is all total nonsense. But that's the sixth stage of anartha nivriti, right? And when we say Nishta is 75%, means 25% is left. What it is depends on the devotee. Okay, he likes a gold leaf bathroom taps. You know, someone else who doesn't, oh, that's all nonsense, but he loves, you know, modern liberal bureaucratic socialism and is against the Vedic culture, you know, so, you know, Varnashram. And so somehow or another, that's not an anartha. You know, so everyone has their, whatever it is, their anartha. That's why it's there. All these things are there. So, and they say, oh, it's going well. You know, we're the big, we're the, you know, how you say, the way, the light and the truth and all that kind of things. That's not riding the waves. That's not taking advantage of the, what's there, of opportunity. So it's just a matter of, you have to get rid of all that. So, in other words, you're steady in devotional service. So because of that steadiness, these things are going to go away because it's the same thing. You're rightly situated. So therefore, it works for everybody. So it also means that the new devotee, because we might think, oh, I'm more advanced and all that, new devotee, he's not really a devotee because, you know, he's not steady, he's not this and that. No, he's rightly situated. So we have to understand, as soon as you come in contact with the bona fide Parampara devotional service, you're rightly situated. You know, you have faith in that and think this is something, you're rightly situated. You're not like anybody else. So therefore, it has to be seen from that point, you know, because the same persons who talked, you know, in the pick up all these nice little phrases to inspire. Yes, you have to speak inspiring. You can't be all this, tough things. And, the glass is half full and stuff like that. And at the same time is then when they look at other devotees, it's like there isn't even a glass, let alone being half empty. They're just not devotees. I've heard that. They're not devotees. They were never devotees. The gurus in the mid-80s who fell down, I've heard it said, they're not devotees. They were never devotees. It was just, no, that's not what Krishna said. Because the world is for going back to Godhead. You're here, you're conditioned, and we're talking not one day, 2 days. We're talking about, unlimited lifetimes. You can't even say how many lifetimes a living entity could have in one lifetime of Brahma. Right. Okay. The first universe. Okay. Your lifetime of Brahma. So then, okay. After one lifetime, they can say, yeah, you've had one lifetime in the material world. But the problem is that unless he goes back to Godhead in that lifetime, which technically he could, but at the same time, if you look around, the volume of living entities kind of gives you an indication that there were a few Brahmas that didn't go back to Godhead in their lifetime. Right. And so therefore, then you go through. I mean, ant lives, what, a couple of weeks, bee also a couple of weeks, fruit fly, I don't know if it's like 24 hours or 36 hours or whatever, something short. There's other living entities that live even shorter. And that, I mean, all these things that you could go through and spend your time on. It's a long time, and even if you take humans, okay, 100 years, you live 100 years, right? Okay, 100 years. In one day of Brahma, that's 4,300,000,000. That goes in 430 million times, and that's just the day, right? So then you have your life, the night. Then everybody's merged back into the Lord. To sleeping. So then, and that's one day, and he has 360 of those days, and then he's going. So that's 36,000 days. So 36,000 times 430 430 million years. That's going to be quite. You're adding on. What do you call it? You're adding on four, well, three zeros. So that puts it up into billion. It's up in the trillions. So one lifetime of Brahma as a human. That's a trillion lifetimes. So let alone that. And humans are the least amount, right? Like that. And so then, the 8 million is the prominence. And so unless you're, one of those Galapagos Island turtles, they live like 400 years, 300 years or something like that. Most other things don't live forever. I think there's one, I can't remember what it is. There's one living entity that unless something happens to it won't die. They're like elves. Right, elves, live forever, but if you cut off their head, then yeah, they die. So I can't compare something like shrimp. It's something like that, or some weirdo animal like that, or some kind of jellyfish. But somebody always eats it, or somebody always steps on it, or like that. It always happens. So yeah. So you don't find a million-year-old shrimp or something like that. Like that. Yeah. So is that so the point is we have to appreciate that devotee who just started and he starts to purify his family. Just like let's say, take for example, Matsyavatara Prabhu. So he was, Italian family, aristocratic Italian family, traditional Italian family. Who've been, very, serious in their practices and all that. And every, evening, then dinner is together. And there's 15 family members that are sitting at dinner. The grandmother is the head of the table. I guess the grandfather had died at this time. And so then she's, heading the family and they all are there. There's no question you're not there. You can't be on your phone, in the next room or, you'll just take something and on a plate and take it up to you. No. So they're all there. So he met the devotees and he talked with them and, asked all his questions and became convinced like that of everything. And then, he thought, okay, this looks very good, And he was thinking about it, and he went home. And then, in the evening is dinner. And so he's sitting at the table. So then grandmother, means, okay, what's happening today? Who did what? And so then he explained how he met the devotees. He went through, explained the conversation, what his doubts were, what their answers were, and all that. So then he said, so I'm thinking that, I would like to take up practicing Krishna consciousness. I think it's, it's just a good thing. I mean, I don't see any, I don't see anything that can answer all the questions. There's no reason not to. And so after presenting everything and making this point, then the grandmother said, well, if you're going to take this up, then we're all going to take it up, because we're a family. So you found what you feel is the best. No one else can say that it's not the best. The whole family became a devotee, became devotees, like that. The whole family. Not that, okay, this one did that. No, just the whole family, because they're committed. Grandma said we're all devotees. So that's the thing is he at this point is he hasn't committed himself to following all the principles and lifestyle of devotee. He's already purified his family. He just got that point of Shraddha that he had faith. And because of that faith and the grandmother seeing that and explaining it, she got faith and then pronounced we're all going to be devotees. And because they all are, I guess more purified, whatever it is, more less sinful people and all that. And so then they all took it up like that. And his house, he uses his house for running his own university. It's an acknowledged university, and he teaches all these courses about devotional service, how do you apply devotional service in your life and everything like that. Very little talked about educational institution like that. So, like that, they're all doing it, So it's that's the whole point. Someone starts, they start, their family starts to become purified. And that's happening in just Shraddha. He hasn't even seriously taken up Sadhu Sangha or Bhajana Kriya. So we have to understand when it's talking about this, devotional service is the independent factor that is doing this. It's not the, oh, he's not doing this thing the way I say or that moralistic or this following this, rule or this life. So therefore he can't be. He's a nonsense until he does what I say. No, it's devotional service. That's the fun part, the great part. It doesn't matter what we think about it or not. Devotional service is still independent and has this part. So we have to look at it. If someone's a devotee, that's special. Then in that, they have to work on it, and they have to advance. And if they come to the Madhyama platform, then there's less anarthas, and the platform is the most stable in which they can get rid of them quickly, right? By being stable and they do like that and don't offend devotees, then with time they'll get taste. Once they get taste, very quickly everything will go away. But until they become steady, yes, there's going to be more of an up and down. That's why steady means it's this, and then otherwise it's like that. Yeah. So this is Prahlad spoke thus to Nrisingadev. So these are discussions that Prahlad Maharaj is happening. And we see here quoted Narad Muni. And who's Prahlad's guru? Narad Muni. He heard this from Narada. And so then these are the discussions with Nrisingadev. Yes. We're good? Yeah? Okay. So Anucheda 101. Therefore, the Brahmins say, Dig Janma Nashtri Vid Yad Tadrig Vratam Dig Bahu Gyatam Dik Kulam Dik Kriya Dakshyam Vim Vimukha Ye Fadhokshaje. So this is from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:23:40. To hell with our threefold birth, our vow of celibacy, and our extensive learning. To hell with our aristocratic background and our expertise in rituals of sacrifice. These are all condemned because we are inimical to the Lord who has appeared many times. So this is the Brahmins, during the when their wives took all the sacrificial items, the edibles out to Krishna and Balaram and their friends and, and attained the platform of prema. And so then coming back, then they're saying, and says here, he says, threefold birth. We're not even talking twofold, threefold, right? The threefold is that, but once they've done the first birth, of course, that everyone has. Second birth, they have the Upanayanam, so they can study the Veda and all that. But now they've taken birth into that they can do all the big Shrauta Yajnas and all that. So even amongst Brahmins, the higher will be one with three births, not two, you know? And so for us, we have the first birth, of course, we have the Upanayanam, and then we have the Pancharatrik. So technically, we're also reborn, because then we can do the temple worship and all these different things like that. And so, their point is that that's within Krishna consciousness. This is just within the Vedic term, the piety, extensive, our vow of celibacy, our extensive learning, our aristocratic background, our expertise in the rituals of sacrifice. These are all condemned because we're inimical to the Lord who has appeared many times. So these things on their own don't make bhakti. It's not that, yes, we have, aristocratic background. Yes, we are Americans. Therefore, we're the superior race. Our expertise in rituals. Yes, we've got our degrees and, in the karmi education, we're professionals, we're this and that. Extensive learning. Oh, yes, I've done my PhD. I know everything, everywhere, on all platforms, in all times, all places, all circumstances, like that. But, this is the point, is that our moralistic ideas, all this, don't make bhakti. It's these can be ornaments for the devotee in bhakti, but they don't make bhakti. That's why it says the chandala, being a devotee, already is purifying himself and his family. So we have to appreciate it's bhakti that's the main thing, not anything else. And yes, according to your nature, you engage those things, but you shouldn't think that everybody's got to be engaged, right? It means you don't like Indian food. Fine, eat whatever you want. Cook it for Krishna, to please Krishna, offer it to Krishna, honor the prasad, in the association of devotees, do that. But don't make a philosophy out of it because you're embarrassed or feel bad that you're the only one doing it. And you have to feel superior, therefore everyone does, and because you told them, that makes you the best. This is cheating, just cheating. So in the same way, whether it's the food, whether it's the clothes, whether it's the social structure, whatever it is, to make your attachments, your anarthas, make them standard for everyone else, so then you're all right. No, that's not good. Like someone was just mentioning that when you have a group, you have what do you call them? The comrades corporate comrades. that they have their little now and again these get-togethers. To feel that oh yes, we're all together, we're all great, and everyone's there only for money. And as long as they're getting money, they're there and they're associates. They don't get the money they want or this, they leave and go somewhere else. So, but whatever it is, it's one of those crocodile grins and pat each other on the back and, the tinking of the, clinking of the glasses and all that. So generally these things, because it is a, modern thing, then they're all malechas and yavanas. And so therefore everything is non-veg and alcohol, and as much non-veg as it can be and as much alcoholics as it can be. And, everything, the better. You can say, wow, this is a real good party. Right? Now, everything's great unless there's one vegetarian there. And if there's a vegetarian there, then everyone feels uncomfortable because they're that, and it's because of some higher principles and some trying to elevate consciousness or out of some other considerations, and they're not doing that, and they got to feel good. They got to be the best. We are the best. We are the champions. We are the champions, like that, kind of thing. And so then that they will feel uncomfortable, And that's not because the vegetarian makes them uncomfortable. That's what a vegan does. But a vegetarian, he's just there because, and he tries to find something he can eat, a little fruit, or, the olive on the stick, he'll take that, and put that in a 7-Up or something. So then, way, like that. On the rocks, of course, like that. Yeah. He's serious. He only drinks water, meat. Ooh, And so that then like that, they make it uncomfortable. And so that's the things you can say is no, we're just trying to make it accessible to everyone. Yeah, you're trying to make it that everybody can keep their attachments to the Mlecha and Yavana lifestyle and do that. But it's not about them, it's about you. Because if you weren't into that, you wouldn't be professing it. It's not like Prabhupada says that's what you should do. It's not like the Acharyas or Bhagavatam says you should do. No, you're doing it just because you're attached. So it's not glorious. So we have to appreciate that. Yes, devotees will be at different platforms and it has to be respected. But the problem is we don't respect. Therefore, devotees come up with these philosophies so that they do get respected because they feel the need for it. You know, if they were more humble and all that, didn't have that, then they may not, and they do what they're doing and it wouldn't worry them. Like that. So we have to see is that this point, even though it's a simple thing, we hear it all the time. You know, we take, yeah, it's a nice thing, it's a sentimental thing, but no, this impacts our life on so many levels. You know, and socially, devotionally, because we don't necessarily know, are not using this gold standard that's set in the Bhagavatam and, you know, by Lord Chaitanya and the Acharyas about what is devotional service and what its effect and what it means. Yes? So here the Brahmins now realizing that they're, you know, topmost and all that. And these are Brahmins in Vrindavan. Remember, this is Brahmins in Vrindavan. They're in the Boma Lila. That means you don't get a higher place than that. You know, it's non-different from Goloka, but at the same time, it's situated lower. But they're not seeing that. They're in the proud, they not proud, yeah, they're in the proud Maya, in the Prakat pastimes of the Lord, and they don't take advantage of it. Why? Because they're worried about, oh, my birth, my celibacy, my extensive learning, my aristocracy, my professionalism in what I do and my rituals. And because of that, they don't see devotional service. Krishna's right there. He's standing outside and boys are coming in. And it's not even that these boys are just coming in and just go, you know, feed us, we're hungry. They're coming in and saying all this stuff. And when the Brahmin is worried, you know, I mean, we can't do that. Then the boys, this is the fun part. The Acharyas point this out. So they're talking about you're at this point in this yajna. Therefore, now that you would give charity to guests and all that, it's allowed. So there are, it's like that. Cowherd boys, no education, right? Just know how to take care of the cows. And they're telling the Brahmins with authority that this particular yajna you're doing at this particular interval, now you can do this. And they're using the Sanskrit terms. Right? And they're not doing it, you know, so that they're just saying, oh, it's a matter of fact. It's just, you know, of course you can do that now. You know? So therefore, but they don't agree. Right? But then they go back. So Krishna now go to their wives. Right? Because the wives then are devotees. So because they're devotees, then immediately they grab everything and bring it out to Krishna. You know, and then the husbands are thinking, wow, how did we miss that? You know, so that's why they say to hell with all these wonderful pious positions, because the piety also means the tendency to want to enjoy. Right? That's the difficulty. Sinful, then you want to do sinful activities. But piety, you want more piety, means you want to enjoy all those things. That's why for the devotee, piety and impiety, both of them are not the point. It's about spiritual piety, which means doing everything connected to Krishna. If you have the spiritual piety, automatically material piety is taken care of. You get the benefits of it and you're avoiding the sinful activities. Right? So it works out very well. So we have to see is that this kind of focus, this is actually is what the you know the technically advanced levels are talking about. People always want to be more technical, more this and that, but this isn't necessarily the point they're talking about. This is the conclusion of the technically advanced stuff. This is the 11th canto. It's already being applied perfectly in the 10th canto, but now it's being pointed out that this is the standard. Nothing else is the standard. So then the Acharya then continues. The commentary of Sridhar Swami says, quote, Trivrit means the three births according to Semon, Gayatri, and Diksha. Vratam means brahmacharya, right? So if you say a vow, then it's brahmacharya. You know, because he also say, you know, he says, you know, in hell with our vows. And that means brahmacharya, because that's going to be the basis of all vows. Brahmacharya is the first vow, right? The living entity is just going on and playing and this and that. Parents are doing the samskaras for the child, right? Child's getting the benefit, but the child itself hasn't taken a determination. So therefore, when they become a brahmachari, that point, that's where then now it becomes the vow. So the vow, all the vows are based on this element of celibacy. So whether it's celibate without a wife or celibate with a wife, so they're engaging in engaging the senses for the production of children. Point is, as Prabhupada says, that there are grihastha brahmacharis. So brahmacharya is the basis of all vrata, right? So that's why it's mentioned, if you're doing something for distinction, adoration, profit, that's subtle sense gratification. So it's not exactly brahmacharya. So that's why it's not ideal. It doesn't give the proper result, right? So you have to have the proper idea that this is for Krishna, right? And kriya means prescribed duties, right? So that's what he's saying, the expertise that they have in rituals of sacrifice. That's the kriya. So it's their prescribed duties. So these are the things they're supposed to do. But now if they're doing that because that's the thing to do, then the point is it's about Krishna. That's the highest prescribed duties, because that's the duties of the soul. So therefore, if you're worried about prescribed duties, then the highest prescribed duties are that of the Vaishnava, right? You're going to get the prescribed duties of the Brahmin. That's going to be higher than the prescribed duties of the Kshatriya, higher than the Vaishya, higher than the Shudra. And all of them are going to be higher than the Malechas and Yavanas. You know, how you say, you know, because you have Malechas, Yavanas, you know, like that. And then you have so many forms of them, you know, Kiratas, Hunas, Andras, Bolindas, like that. So then you can just classify them all together and just in one category and just call them Chandalas. And, you know, it works out. Yeah. Yes. So then you see as all these things, they come up as that's what's there. So therefore, the actual birth is birth into Krishna consciousness. That's the real birth. So that's why the diksha is considered the most important. You know, the celibacy means then it's celibate, so everything's the senses are just engaged in Krishna's service. Like that. The learning means if you don't, by learning, you don't understand that Krishna is tattva, Krishna is rasa, he is the highest truth, then you have an understood knowledge. You know, aristocratic background, the highest aristocratic background is in being in the family of Krishna and his devotees and associates. You know, in the parampara. And then rituals of sacrifice and that are prescribed duties, and the highest is service to Krishna. That Kim Janmabhis Tribir Veha Shaukra Savitra Yagnikai Karamabhir Va Trai Proktai Humso Pi Vibhudhayusha. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. Without that quote, without that service, what is the use of taking three births by Saman, Upanayanam, and initiation? What is the use of ritual acts mentioned in the Vedas? What is the use of the lifespan of a devata or a human? Right. The Brahmins performing sacrifice spoke thus. Right. So that's the point. What's the use of all these things? So that's why we can say is, oh yeah, it's all for Krishna. And now we'll just focus on this. But the point is you should be regularly trying to remind yourself by, you know, in the association of devotees, by studying, you know, and by the natural process, by chanting and the devotional activities where the heart becomes purified, then to understand its connection to Krishna. One has to have that desire, then it will naturally move forward. Otherwise, we just say, okay, you know, yukta vairagya, so use everything in Krishna's service, so I'm attached to these, everything, so I'll just absorb myself in those. And because I'm a devotee, it's automatically connected. Means there will be some connection because some aspect of it will be brought back into devotional service. But one has to remember, if it's just if it's about the position, authority, power, facilities, you know, enjoyment, or whatever it is that one's looking for in those particular material attachments that we have that we're supposedly yukta vairagya, right? It's not enough. You know, yes, for the neophyte, that's all right, that they're even just thinking to connect it to Krishna and try to do it. So they live this dual lifestyle of, you know, the direct activities, the devotional service. And then when they go out in their life now and again, they remember or they offer the prasad, or, you know, they have some pictures on the wall of Krishna and all that. So, but otherwise, then it means for most, you go into the house of the devotee, you wouldn't know the difference between their house and the karmi house. You know, like that. You can't tell the difference. So the only place you see the difference is in the altar. You know, they have an altar. You know, if you check in the refrigerator, there's, you know, it's vegetarian. So there are, you know, subtle hints. And if they're more mature, then you'll see the house is more clean. But it's not necessarily that they're adjusting their lifestyle, you know, into, you know, more traditional elements. One is, of course, you have because of the way facilities, the way the buildings are built and everything like that, you know, it makes it a little harder. But my point is it's not thought about that you could do these things. You know, there are elements you can add. And so my point being is that we should be thoughtful. Prabhupada makes that point, Manisha, that you're thoughtful, right? Not that you're just doing, you know, you thought something, then you're just doing. You should be thinking all along. That's what manana means, is that you've heard, you've analyzed, you've removed doubts. Now you're applying it. But then you're analyzing, how is that, is it coming closer to Krishna or not? So if you're not seeing that, then it's not going anywhere. So if by going in the direction that you're going, your conclusion then is we don't need all the, you know, Vedic religious processes, that means there was no manana. Or your manana had some other purpose. You didn't remove the doubts. So therefore, you didn't actually successfully complete Shravana. Because you have doubts that are actually misgivings, and then you're analyzing all your activities on how they are fulfilling your misgivings and doubts rather than how they're bringing you closer to Krishna and away from those. So one has to be, so one should be thoughtful and be aware. And so then that makes it nice. You know, Bhaktivinoda, of course, says one should, you know, on a regular basis be analyzing. You know, if one can do it all the time, then that's good. If not, then he gives example like an Ekadasi, you know, because it's there. Then you think back, okay, my service, how's it going? How is it connecting to Krishna? How is my attitudes? How's my, you know, how you say, you know, Trinada Pisuni Chainat, or like, how am I developing on those? Nadanam Chana, am I being careful of that? You know, these kind of things. And then you see, and then you try to apply it again, and next Ekadasi, you analyze again. Or you, whenever it is, you just regularly, as you're doing things, from think or like that. Yes? No? Okay. Riti. Next, the author excites from Srimad Bhagavatam, or from Srimad Bhagavad Gita and the Puranas, to affirm that the Supreme Lord finds delight in the bhakti process, as opposed to being pleased by sacrificial rites and karma or yogic practices undertaken with impure senses. Anucheted 102. Mayeva mana adhastva mai buddhim niveshaya nivasish yasi mayeva ata urdvam na samshayaha. Concentrate your mind only on me. Fix your intelligence on me. You are without doubt dwell close to me after leaving the body. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. One who is engaged in Lord Krishna's devotional service lives in a direct relationship with the Supreme Lord. So there's no doubt that his position is transcendental from the very beginning. Right? So that's the point you're saying, you know, carrying on from the very beginning. Like that. A devotee does not live on the material plane. He lives in Krishna. The holy name of the Lord and the Lord are non-different. Therefore, when a devotee chants Hare Krishna, Krishna and his internal potency are dancing on the tongue of the devotee. When he offers Krishna food, Krishna directly accepts these eatables, and the devotee becomes Krishnized by eating the remnants. One who does not engage in such service cannot understand how this is so. Although this is a process recommended in the Bhagavad Gita and the other Vedic literatures, Bhagavad Gita 12.8 purport, right? So what I was pointing out is that because one is engaged in devotional service, one can understand how you're getting engaged by association. So agyata sukrita is coming from association. So by association, you develop. So that's the most important element is association. So one should associate with those more advanced than yourself. Means advanced means in devotional service, not in mundane elements. Right? Means that for your occupation, you associate with those who are better at your occupation than you. Naturally, you develop the skills in that area. But the occupation is only to maintain your life. Like varna, our occupation, only is there to support ashram. It's not for any other purpose. You can use it for that, for social distinction and that. And that's what the Brahmins were commenting on. That, you know, to hell with all these things because we were using it, that we're such special people. You know, so then, you know, as pointed out, it's because you're associating with devotees, that's why you understand it. And so then, you know, Prabhupada points out is that you appreciate and understand the varnashram, that's because of devotional service and doing devotional service. So if you're not, you don't appreciate it, means that area, you're not doing any devotional service. You know, you can say as, oh, we're doing all this thing, that, you know, like that, but no. Because otherwise, why isn't it appreciated? Right? So it just means you don't think in the area and associate with devotees on that thinking and try to uplift it to what, you know, Prabhupada and the Acharyas say, then it's not successful. So that area won't develop. Krishna, you know, you desire, Krishna fulfills. Man proposes, God disposes. So maybe in your japa or some other areas, then you're focusing and that's going very nicely. You're advancing there and see the need. But in these others, you know, other religious areas, we're not. And so if you say, no, but I'm associated with it. Devotee is more advanced than me. And we're discussing these things and we've decided that they're not important means, yes, they may be more advanced than you, maybe in, you know, the chanting or studying Bhagavatam or some other things like that. But when it comes to the religious processes, they're not more advanced than you. And therefore you and them, then it goes down. That's why it says the guru is not, you know, situated in devotional service, then trying to take a disciple across the water, then it's like a stone boat. So both the guru and the disciple will sink. So if your conclusion is opposition to the Vedic version, then you're associating with the wrong senior devotees in that aspect. It may be you're associating nicely when you're chanting, and they may be great at chanting, but in these areas, no, it's, you're not even looking at it devotionally. Otherwise, the acharyas are recommending to do all these things, you do. But we see is it's only them engaged in Krishna's service that it's there for, simply to assist. Like I say, yes, you've set up the kitchen really nicely and get high quality, you know, utensils and ingredients, and the cooking comes out really nice, you know, because you're cooking for Krishna. So yes, the mechanical work, but the whole point is to do it for Krishna. You don't do it for Krishna, and you have a great Krishna cooking kitchen and cook nicely. What's the point? A waste of time. So it's always in its relationship to Krishna. So you can say, "As oh, I we can't see how it would be involved." Then that's the point. Associate with those that can show you that how Prabhupada and the Acharyas are explaining. So we have to see is that all these different cultural things we make up, oh, this one's this, this one's that. They're based on something real. Yes, if someone's a Prabhupada disciple, that's going to be more senior like that. You know, if someone's in these different varnas and ashrams, they're based on the scriptures. But the point is then make it into a social status and that, and distinction, adoration, that's not what it's for. So one has to appreciate that, no, these things are there, but not for that. It's not for position, because that's what they're worried. Oh, but he's a Brahmin and I'm not, so he's better. No. As a devotee, you're better. He's a Brahmin, so therefore he being the Brahmin in the Varna system, therefore within the occupational duties, then he's giving some direction on how to understand the consciousness. He's not telling you details of how to work and managing your life. Then he's not a Brahmin. Right? That's the whole point. The Brahmins give the principles that are there, and the practical things come from your own area. Like, does that make sense? You know, so we have to appreciate that all these things come together, and that's the point. Why are they Kiratas, Hunas, Andras, Palindas, Pulkashas, Apiras, Shumbas, Yavanas, Kashas, and others of low birth and those sinful by accident? Because they're not following the Vedas. They don't care about it. That's why they're there. But they take it up, then naturally they'll do. Just like we say, oh, the Chandala, he has to follow the principle of, yeah. So the same way as he would naturally, that's the you know, the religious aspects of the, you know, the Pancharatra Vedic process. But it also means you have the process by your Varna and Ashram also. Why would you only accept one thing and not another? But at the same time, you're not accepting the Vedic, you're accepting the modern moralistic thing and not the Vedic moralistic thing. Why would the devotee do that? Because if you're already following the Vedic, it already is in line with the modern. And you can say it's no, but you know, the rules are so different. But the point is no, the principles are the same principles that they're doing. Right? Because the point is you can say is, okay, you know, marriage, he can't marry many wives. In the Vedic, you say that, and it's against the law here, so we can't do that and all that, because the law is the supreme and all that, as long as I agree with it. But if I don't agree with it, I couldn't care less. Like that. So generally, most people don't go for that extensive translations. They just go for the, you know, the direct, I mean, the seeming, the obvious of the words, dictionary meanings of the words. So, but the point is no, the principle is that Grihastha is getting married to go back to Godhead and try to elevate his consciousness, right? Therefore, if you're actually really serious about spiritual, you stick to one wife, because where does the one wife thing come from? It comes from the Christianity, right? Like that. I think if you look at the Judaic, they had more than one wife. So the Christians are worried about Muslims, they can have more than one wife. The Hindu can have more than one wife. Muslims, all other cultures, you can have. Christian, it's only one. And the good thing about that is that's the rule in the Vedic also. If you're serious about spiritual, you just have one wife. You know, so only if someone has more, has greater material facility and ability, and you know, more desire, then he might have more than one wife. Like Ramachandra had, he was emperor of the world, but he only had one wife, right? You know, so he was looking at it that, you know, but his father had more. You know, he had three main wives, and so it's not a problem like that, because he had the facility. If you have, it's not that I have the desire, therefore I have. No, it's you have the facility and the desire, then you apply. Because you see, Ramachandra has the facility, but not the desire. But someone else having the desire, not the facility, he, no. So therefore, stick to one, because you can't deal with more than that. So that's the point that's there. So that's what we're dealing. So even if you explain to the Christian, that's what's going on. And so since we're spiritual, therefore we stick to that. But it doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means that, you know, why we don't use it. You know, just like you could get up in the middle of the night and eat a bucket of halva, but we don't. We don't want to reveal too many of the brahmachari secrets, you know, like that. So we're keeping it for the general audience. Right? Like that. Yeah, like that. You know, like that. Yeah. You know, if you know the secret handshake, then we'll talk about the bucket of halva at midnight. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's the point, is one who's engaged, then he lives in a direct relationship with the Lord, because it's the Lord is there. He's in the heart, he's dealing. But that means that direct relationship means that it's direct, meaning you're interacting with Krishna. Your you could say social relationship with Krishna is not direct because it'll be through the devotees and all these things like that. But the interaction Krishna deals is directly, right? He's right in the heart. He's dealing. He's arranging for you and all that. And so there's no doubt he's transcendental from the beginning. The point is he's still conditioned. It's like Prabhupada gives the example. If someone's having a bad dream and someone might wake them up. So when they come up, they go, I'm having a bad dream. So they know it's a dream, but they're still thinking about the dream, even though around them there is no tiger. There is no this and that, you know. Nobody stole your bucket of halva, you know. So there's no, you know, how you say, nightmarish things going on, but you're still thinking of them in that. So it's that stage in between. That's why it's recommended when you take a bath that there's that element of the cool water being used. It means the warm water may cleanse the body, but the cool water cleanses the subtle body. And so then you can say, as you know, from waking up till your bath, that point is it's still in between. It's still, you're still sleepy, still maybe thinking of what was dreaming, still this and that. So that's the whole point when you come to Krishna consciousness. It's still like that. It means there'll be that effect from that, and there's the positive. But the point is you're with Krishna in that, but you don't know it. Just like, let's say you have the 3-year-old kid, you know, in this super wealthy family. He is filthy rich. But he doesn't know it. But he is. You know? Like that. And he can say, well, I'm not, because I can't tell people to do what I want. You know, the servants don't do what I say. They only do what my mom says. You know, so I'm not. No, it's that because she's doing it for your benefit, because she knows if they do what you want, then things aren't going to work out. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's the thing. He lives in Krishna. It's the spiritual platform. That's why we have to deal on the spiritual platform. The mundane platform for us is just, you know, yeah, you're walking down the street. Then, you know, is it all about, okay, this foot, then this foot, and this foot, and okay, get down, measure the thing. Okay, yeah, I got to have it this many centimeters and all that. And then he has, okay, how I'm going, it's all like that. And, you know, stick on the side like that and get the sun like this and, you know, do all that kind of stuff. No, you just walk. And while you walk, you be careful. Don't bump into people. Don't, you know, step on the dog poo and, you know, all that kind of stuff. You just, it's just part of what you do. You're walking to go for Krishna. You don't care about all the other stuff. So yes, you follow the different laws and that, but how much does it take? Yeah. Cross at the crosswalks. Okay. Now, is that something every day? Now we got to announce in the Istagosti and in the morning announcements and every Bhagavatam class, we got to talk about it. No. So if that's what we're doing with these material things, that means there's something wrong here. It means you don't understand the transcendental position. You can function in that. Why do otherwise? Yeah, and then those things you are tied, engage them in Krishna service. That's all. It's not that they're important. It's Krishna service, and you happen to use that. That's all. Yeah. Then, let's see. Ata chittam samadhatum na shaknosi maya mayi stiram. Abhyasa yogena tato mam ichaptum dhananjaya. So where is this from? It's here, 12.9 purport. So that was 12.8. The next one. Prabhupada. In this verse, two different processes of bhakti yoga are indicated. Forgot to read the translation. Otherwise, if you're not able to concentrate your mind on me steadily, then seek to attain me by the method of withdrawing the mind from sense objects and fixing it on me. O conqueror of wealth, Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, two different processes of bhakti yoga are indicated. The first applies to one who has actually developed an attachment for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by transcendental love. And the other is for one who has not developed an attachment for the Supreme Person by transcendental love. For this second class, there are different prescribed rules and regulations one can follow to be ultimately elevated to the states of attachment to Krishna. So that's why what we have and we've been given, which Prabhupada's given the acharyas, these are the rules and regulations that can elevate us up to that point of attachment to Krishna. Right? And so when we're looking at attachment to Krishna, it means steady attachment to Krishna. When it's steady, that you're always concentrating on your mind steadily. It's not that you're in the kirtan and it was a great kirtan and you had a very nice experience and you're attached to that, but you're not necessarily regularly applying that attachment. You've gotten that taste. You've gotten that higher taste, and it helps you advance. like that. But it's still, one has to follow the rules and regulations as given by the acharyas, so that that stableness and that will bring you to the point of taste, and then from taste will come attachment. So in other words, if there's no attachment, there's no taste. If there's no taste, there's no steadiness. If there's no steadiness, because of the distraction by the other. So that's why the regulation. Right? How are we doing? Okay. So we'll stop here and continue tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada.